I had one client who could no longer play tennis with his kids. You know, for him, you know, that means so much, right? It's good time spent with your kids. Sometimes people can lose sight of that. And making sure, you know, that we're always there for our clients, and making sure that we always empathize with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and understand what they're going through. I think that makes the biggest difference.
Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be, you know, to be back to where I grew up.
All right. Well, back to where you grew up. Can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, where you started, where you grew up, and then where you're at now?
Yeah. So I grew up in Bucks County. Went to Pensbury High School, which you went to
Council Rock.
Yep. So we played a lot of games.
Yeah.
I played soccer. So okay. I played against Council Rock a few times.
What position?
Forward.
Forward. Okay. So you scored a lot of goals?
Yeah. I think I scored two against Council Rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but that was a career only, or just one game?
No. And it was one season where we went undefeated. But I think Council Rock was the only tie.
Okay.
So
maybe they're good, maybe they're not. But
yeah. I don't know how they are now. It's, you know, 20 years.
Yeah.
Before, so. Yeah, I grew up here, went to Temple for undergrad, you know, diehard Philly sports fan.
Okay.
You're welcome. Thank you. But I landed up in North Jersey. So I'm okay. I'm in Giants Nation.
Oh.
So,
not the Mets, though.
There's a lot of Mets fans up there.
You're not.
No, I'm a Phillies fan. Yeah. I was actually in Philly 2008. I was living in Philly when we won the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember. I lived in South Philly, and I remember.
Okay.
We were watching the game. We were feeling good, and we were ran up South Street from like 2nd Street up to Broad Street, and it was just chaos.
Maybe we saw each other,
and we just hung around Broad Street, and it was a crazy night.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. I lived right by the art museum.
Okay.
So I ran to Broad Street.
You ran the other way. I was coming from 2nd in Washington.
Yeah. So, I ran all the way down there and then, you know, I wanted to get a view. So I got up on one of those newsstands.
Okay. At least it wasn't the poles.
Yeah. And, you know, a cop brought me down. And then there were a bunch of fire trucks going through the streets. I jumped on one of those.
You jumped on a fire
truck? Yeah, I jumped on a fire truck. Wow. I was, you know, like six streets were on, you know, on the fire truck.
Firemen knew you were on the truck?
And cool. We were like 20 of us on there.
I know a lot of Philly firefighters, and they're usually good guys.
Yeah, so it was crazy awesome. Times. Crazy
so you
times.
Took it the fire truck to where?
It was on Broad, and then it turned, I don't know which street, but you know, we went for like 5-6 blocks
down south, I guess maybe.
It went towards Penn's Landing.
Okay.
And I worked at Mushulu.
Oh, you did?
The restaurant. Restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked there
for
like 2 years. So that's actually a crazy story. When I first went to Philly for undergrad, you know, I had to support myself. I was looking for jobs, you know, I was walking into restaurants asking for jobs, and I saw this ship. I'm like, oh, let me try. So I went there, you know, and the GM was available and, you know, they needed to hire someone. And he said, you know, he asked me a couple questions and I didn't know the answer because it was, you know, like fine dining questions. And he's like, well, yeah, I'm just going to be honest with you. We don't have a job for you. I was like, no, you don't understand. You need to hire, you know, whatever it is, just hire me and then you'll see my value. And then, you know, he said, all right, go be a busboy. Like, okay. So it's my first night, you know, it's fine dining. Those plates are heavy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm bussing those plates, but like, it's hurting my back. So after one night I go to him, I'm like, hey, you got to give me a different job. So, you know, he goes, all right, go be a valet. And, you know, I'm doing valet, but there's two guys who are working there, and they come whenever they want. You know, it's a public parking lot, and so valet is optional. So I think they were just choosing the best nights where they can make some money.
Yeah.
But I needed money to pay rent, you know, to live, basically.
Living expenses.
So I went to the GM, and I said, hey, look, you know, like, these guys come in whenever they want. I'll find you a crew to valet any day you want, you know, whether it's 3-5 people, because I had some other friends who were looking for jobs. I said, but you make me a waiter.
Uh-huh.
You know, all this happened within like 3 weeks. And so I eventually became, you know, a waiter, the job I initially went there for.
Wow.
And so I worked there for about 2 years.
Okay. And this was in college or law school?
College. So for undergrad, I was at Temple. And then for law school, I went to Rutgers, Newark.
Newark.
So I was up in North Jersey. I lived in New York for 6 years and then finally settled in North Jersey.
Gotcha. You said you lived in New York or
New York? Yeah, I lived right by Battery Park, like downtown Manhattan. Yeah.
So going back to your waitering, right? So I was a waiter in law school.
Yeah.
Hell, I was a waiter in college. I went to University of Delaware. I was a waiter at Bennigan's.
Okay.
It's an old story. It closed down now. It's a chain. You know, I was a waiter there. And, you know, I think every person, every business owner should be a waiter.
Yeah.
I mean, you learn. I mean, I have 3 boys, and although they're heavily involved in sports right now, and really sports are so involved where there's no time to work, maybe a little bit in the summer, but it's really difficult. But maybe in college, if they're not wrestling in college or doing their sports in college, but be a waiter. Like John Morgan talks about being a paper boy.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really any paper boys.
Not anymore, right?
No, like, there's only a couple people I know get papers anymore, but being a waiter, I learned a lot, how to talk to people, how to sell, how to deal with people, how to deal with people with problems, right? Yeah. And has that helped you think, in your career?
Oh, for sure. Especially, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're attorneys, but we're in the service sector, right? We are servicing people, and, you know, it's high stakes people. It's you know, being a waiter, you're helping them with food, but, you know, it's an important meal for them. You know, and you carry so many of those skills, you know, throughout your life. And the earlier you learn those skills, you know, the better you're set for the rest of your life.
It helps you be humbled sometimes if you, like, it may not be your fault per se. It may be the kitchen's fault. The food might not be on time. You might be at a cranky person who just is never happy, and you have to learn how to deal with those people.
Mm-hmm.
All when you're young, right?
And yeah.
Nobody teaches you that. Like,
yeah.
You learn that maybe through years of working in the field, but to have those skills early and be able to grow them, I think is important.
Yeah, I actually worked at, do you remember Great American Diner and Pub?
Yep. Yeah.
I worked at both the one in Langhorne and in Bens Hill.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I worked, you know, I started working in, I believe, 9th grade.
Wow.
You know, I was an expo. The expo is the person who coordinates all the food that comes from the kitchen staff and then gives it to the sort of waiters. So it's kind of like a catalyst, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the only 2 people who were able to do that job on a busy Friday and Saturday night were the owner and the GM. And then I was the 3rd one. Wow. So, and I did
it around like crazy.
Yeah.
You got to check everything to make sure it's perfect.
You got to get the main food, and then you got to get the sides, and you got to do it quick.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 9th grade, didn't have a car. So the owner would send one of the older waiters pick me up from my house.
Wow.
And then, you know, take me and then drop me off. But I learned a lot.
That's awesome.
In those years.
So, but service, like, you know, you hear people talk about it all the time, but, you know, we're in the service industry. We're just delivering legal services, right? We're not selling products, you know. We're not building things. We're providing a service for people. And the general public, most of them, in my experience, thankfully, have never dealt with an injury lawyer before.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's their first time that they're not in multiple accidents or multiple injuries. But the Fortune 500 companies have really set the bar high for us.
Yeah.
You got Uber. It tells you how you can order from your phone. It tells you how long it's going to be there. It tells you when it's going to be there. You see it coming towards you.
Yeah.
And then it asks you how they did. And it's all linked to your credit card, so you don't have to use any cash. Mm-hmm. Like, what a great service that is. Like Starbucks, if you want to order your coffee on the way to work, you can use the app.
Yeah.
It tells you when it's ready.
Yeah.
All you do is go through the drive-thru and tell them your number. McDonald's is like that. And most people injured, I find, are not people that use a lot of professionals generally to have service. Like, you know, there's accountants, there's lawyers, there's financial people. You know, that is a professional service, which is a little bit different. because we're doing all people stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's these Fortune 500 companies with these apps and everything else make it so convenient that people expect very similar service. Now, we don't have the tech like an app necessarily to provide our whole service, but we have to provide human service with staff and people and phone calls and just keeping our clients updated. And most lawyers historically are not service driven.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know about you, but you're mostly in New Jersey, and do you do some New York work?
New York and New Jersey.
Yeah, the number one complaint to our, you know, Board of Bar Examiners, the people in charge of the lawyers, are that the lawyers are not, you know, updating their clients enough.
Mm-hmm.
Client contact.
Yes, sir.
The service part of it. And with today's technology and what we have apps to do this, we have different programs to do this. We have AI now to give updates to clients if they want it that way. Plus, we have our case managers and our paralegals that in our firm are required to give updates every 30 days to our clients at minimum.
That's great.
And then there's outgoing messages for our app and things when things update and change. But most lawyers and the legal world, whether it's a business lawyer or an immigration lawyer or even a personal injury lawyer, most of them that I see are just not interested in delivering that whole client experience like I know your firm does and we do. And we're constantly investing in technology and good people to help deliver that service, because that's what that client expects in today.
Yeah.
Have you seen that in your practice?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's interesting you're talking about this, because 10 years ago when I started my firm, my partner and I, sat down for brainstorming, and we said, hey, what is the number one pain point for a client? It's that they can't get a hold of their clients. They can't get a hold of their attorneys.
Yeah.
And so what we did, I have two cell phones, one that I use at night, from 9 to 6. And then the other one that all of my clients have. So, when we started 10 years ago, we said, all right, we're going to make sure that we are accessible. And so I think that has made a tremendous, tremendous value in terms of how we grew, how fast we grew.
Yeah.
We're about 15 attorneys now, 60 staff in total. And we've told our staff, hey, you have to get back to a client within 24 hours. They send you an email. If they send you a message, if they call you within 24 hours. But like you said, all these big companies have these A-class tailored service, and attorneys are at the other end of the spectrum on this generally.
Attorneys are usually old-fashioned, especially the older generation attorneys. My father's still practicing. He's 75. And they're not tech savvy.
Yeah.
And frankly, when we're 75, we may not be tech savvy either compared to, it's just a generational thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting you said that, because, when I get a message, so we have a call center, like if nobody can answer here, or nights and weekends when we have nobody here in person, we have a call center that's meant for legal, that knows us, that we've been using for over 10 years, that will give us messages, because we don't want to miss a phone call.
Right.
We don't use voicemail here.
Yeah.
We don't have an answering machine. Like that's a no-no.
That's great.
In my world.
That's great.
But when I see a message coming in saying, hey, a client's calling for a paralegal, basically stating that I need an update on my case, that's a red flag for me.
Yeah.
That kind of upsets me, wondering, where did we break down? And, we see them from time to time, and it's always like, that used to be a normal thing back 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now we try to be so proactive with our communications going out that the client generally doesn't need an update.
Yeah.
Like they're feeling it from us, and that's our goal, is to deliver that feeling that we're actually working on the case. Our goal is to try to move that case as fast as we can.
Yeah.
Right? And that client's going to hear from us. And if they don't want to hear from us by phone calls because they're working all the time or they're in school, we can text.
Mm-hmm.
There's other ways we can communicate with our clients if they choose, but we want them to feel it from us. So when a client calls our office and we get a message saying, I haven't heard from you, or I need an update, or you haven't gotten back to me, that's what makes me upset as a leader.
Yeah. Even if it's just the message saying, hey, there's no update on your case, you know, we're still waiting to hear from the insurance adjuster. Even that puts clients at ease.
Yeah.
I think with, you know, technology and AI, attorneys, you know, if they're open-minded and, you know, willing to be uncomfortable about learning new things, I think, you know, attorneys can bridge that gap, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think with AI in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, or maybe even the next 10 years, I think, you know, we'll really be able to give that that Uber-like service,
yeah,
you know, to the
And
clients.
I think our firms are in the best position. So, you know, when I started this firm, well, I started practicing law in 2002, right? I didn't work. I worked at a firm in New Jersey for 2 years, and then I joined up with my father, who's an estate planning lawyer. We had a diversified practice. But I always felt like, damn, I missed the internet beginning, where if I had a really strong website from the beginning, mm-hmm, I could really crush it. Now I'm entering the game, you know, in 2002, you know, about 5-6 years late or so, you know. And now AI has really come to fruition this year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In January this year, I had no idea that we were going to be an AI-centric firm, mm-hmm, here now in December. We are using it for pre-litigation, for litigation, and we're going to be starting to use it in intake, and we're going to try to design our whole firm around it so it makes us more efficient. Why? Because I want to move that case as fast as we can for the client. That client,
yeah,
needs to have resolution as fast as possible. But there's so many things that are out of our control. Like you said, like clients are waiting. You know, like, for example, we're waiting for a police report in the beginning of the case. There's not much we can do at that point. We're waiting for medical records, which takes a long time in a lot of cases, which is probably the biggest bottleneck that I see, mm-hmm, for personal injury law firms today, is trying to get medical records. And I'm hoping that these medical records companies come out with an AI solution to help speed it up from their end.
Yeah.
So that our computer systems can communicate with their computer system,
yeah,
and we can get medical records within weeks instead of months.
Yes.
But certain things, like we're waiting on the insurance company to evaluate the demand letter. Like, there's so many things that we're dependent on others. But when it comes to our business in-house, I want to move that case as fast as we can. And that's my goal as a leader here, is to try to look at every system from the beginning to end, shake it upside down. Now we're applying AI. Now we have some international employees, which are helping us off hours, things like that, mm-hmm, to try to move our clients' cases as fast as we can. And guess what? If the insurance company is not going to settle the case with us for fair value or full policy limits, we're going to put that case right into litigation as fast as we can,
mm-hmm,
whether it's in 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, or even, yeah, sooner if it's a big case that we know is not going to settle.
Right.
The goal is to get that client full compensation, whatever that means. That might be in a full policy limit offer, or a very good offer on a high policy limit. And if the insurance companies are willing to pay us, we're going to put it in the suit. And we have a team of trial lawyers now that we're willing to take these cases to the end. And then it's a whole nother ballgame, as you know. Like, once you file a lawsuit, then you're at the court schedule.
Right? Yeah.
And it's usually 1 to 2 years before you can get the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the courts have been doing better in our areas.
Yeah.
Bucks County has done a great job. Philadelphia has done a great job. But there's still some courts that it's forever to get to trial.
Wow.
But I have two cases right now that are going to be on the trial list. One's in February.
Mm-hmm.
We made a demand. It sat for a year because the judge had to take it off our court schedule to do a mediation. And then the judge couldn't get it to a jury trial until February. So we're sitting on it. We have a jury trial in February. That's the case has sat for a year. At no fault of ours, just the judge couldn't get a trial. And we're going to trial on that unless this insurance company puts up millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And they're feeling the squeeze right now. It's the end of the year. And February 2nd's coming fast. So anyway.
How do you console that client?
Yeah.
Well, what do you tell them? Because it's not your fault. It's not their fault.
Yeah. Well, every case is different. I know that's a kind of cliche answer, but this case involves the death of their mother. And, you know, their mother was in her apartment and she had a toilet leak. And because of the toilet leak, they hired a water restoration company. And the water restoration company brought in these machines called dehumidifiers and fans called air movers. And the dehumidifiers are powerful commercial dehumidifiers that put out air. So they suck in the cold air and they pump it out. It's at 115 to 120 degrees, the air shooting out of these machines. They put in two of these big machines in her apartment and came one day, they tripped all the breakers. Came the next day, it was a Friday, they put another machines in there and they circulate the hot air called a vortex, which is like the way they dry out water damaged apartments. And that's the way to do it. And I get it, but they failed to take action to protect the lady that was staying in the apartment. Because usually they do these in a commercial setting, like in an office. And the person's not living in there. But this was during COVID. It was October of 2020. She had multiple comorbidities. She had mobility issues. She had a new cat in her office, or in her house. And she didn't feel like she could leave. So she stayed there. And she let them know they were staying there. And as a result, they set the machines up on Friday. By Sunday, the neighbor found her, passed away.
Wow.
From hypothermia, naked because she took her clothes off because she was so hot, decomposing. And what did, I took 25 depositions in that case. Wow. And what did the corporate representative say from the restoration company? It's her fault. If she was warm, she should have just walked out. Ignoring all the facts dealing with, you know, hypothermia, where you get dazed, you get dizzy, you're disoriented, eventually pass out.
Yeah.
Right? And they said, I said, what would you have done differently if you could take this back and this lady didn't die? You know what he said? I would have her sign a waiver. I said, wow. What? A waiver?
I think a jury should hear this.
Yeah. I said, you mean that you would have her sign a waiver so that you and your company would not be responsible for this tragic death? He goes, yes.
Wow.
I have that on video. If the judge allows me, I'm going to play my opening statement.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if
defense attorneys hear that, they're on notice.
Yeah. If they're not willing to settle at, you know, high eight figures, jury will come back. You know,
well,
and nine figures.
Yeah. Well, we focus group this case and, I can't say too much more because the trial's in February, but if they don't come up with the money to settle this case, we're going to trial. And my point is that we were talking about time and delay, right?
Yeah.
So I have two sons that are, you know, in their late 40s, early 50s, and thankfully they've been patient.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
And I don't want them to have to go through trial. Going through trial to relive the death of their mother. I've had many clients, you know, young men that have been killed in motorcycle accidents. And the last thing a grieving parent wants to do is have to tell the kid's story in trial.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing. And many cases, unfortunately, settle for less than they're supposed to because insurance companies try to take advantage of those situations, which really drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Just pay fair compensation, but they don't because they want to save money.
Right? Of course.
Their job's to save money. But at least we know with the car insurance companies, they're happy to pay it to Patrick Mahomes, right?
Yeah.
On TV.
Yeah.
All the time.
Like, yeah.
You know, all of them, right?
They're advertising everywhere.
So they're spending their money there, but they don't want to compensate real claims. Not every case is like that. That's, you know, we're here to fight for those real claims. So to answer your question, every case is different. These guys are willing to wait for us, and they want to go to trial if we can't get them something fair, which is great because most clients want to settle. They're afraid to go to trial. They don't want to take the risk of trial.
Yeah.
And these two sons that I have are like, we have a great case. They should pay. If they don't, we're going to trial in February. So that date's coming. So it's just a little story about, you know, time and how long things take. And most clients, when they get injured, they don't understand all that. So that's why it's important to educate
clients. Yes. Yes.
What do you do at your firm to educate your clients?
So we, you know, at our firm, we give them a 1 hour lesson at the beginning of what to expect from A to Z.
Okay. Who gives that lesson?
I have one of my paralegals give that lesson.
Okay.
And we'll go through what to expect. And we'll tell them the important things. Hey, you know, you treating, you making sure you are obsessive about making your appointment is rule number one. If the doctor tells you to do something, you do it. The doctor tells you to not do something, you don't do it.
And of course, they have a question, they can always call you.
Of course.
Because you're experienced, you know, you've seen these cases, you've seen these kinds of cases, you've seen these types of injuries, and they, you could be the sounding board for them too. Oh, doctor wants me to go do this. Hey, John, what do you think about that? Like, do you think I should really get that injection or should I try physical therapy first? Like, you know, doctors come from different places and some of them are like, you know, pains, for example, a pain management doctor may be like, oh, I want to shoot you with injections. And maybe you should try something else first, but that doctor's looking at it from his or her perspective. When you're seeing the whole picture, because you've represented hundreds, if not thousands of accident victims, and you know how the typical recovery phase goes with less invasive to more invasive treatment. And sometimes you have to really, and the clients are smart. Like they know, like, should I be getting this procedure done right away?
Of course.
Or should I try something else? What do you think?
Of course.
We're not medical doctors.
Exactly.
But I study medicine almost every day.
Yeah.
Like my family comes to me about medicine because I have to study the medicine. I need to know that knee injury or that shoulder injury so well that I can cross-examine an orthopedic surgeon.
Exactly.
And who may be telling a little bit of fibs or
working
in the gray area.
One way.
And we need to be able to call that out because they usually just work with words. And be able to know that medicine and that science well enough that you can call out and make them look bad if they're against you in a case or in a deposition.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what I do with my clients is I create a group chat and they are able to text us anytime. I have two staff and myself and one other attorney, you know, on every chat. And so they're able to text us, you know, real time and get real time, you know, replies. In addition, you know, making sure these clients are well taken care of. For example, I have one client who was recommended for surgeries, two surgeries. And, you know, he's a 21-year-old kid. He doesn't have a lot of family in the area, so he's a little scared. And, you know, I've treated him like family, as I do with all of my clients. And, you know, he called me last week. He said, look, I'm scared. You know, I'm scared of surgery. The doctor recommended surgery. I said, hey, let's go get a second opinion. I will come with you. So next week I'm going with my client to another doctor to get a second opinion.
Yeah.
You know, in addition, you know, next week I also have, an appointment with two doctors where I'm going to have them run me through, you know, all the things that I want to know in the medical field.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, understanding their injuries, I think that's where attorneys, you know, personal injury attorneys can really bring out value in their clients' cases.
I think they're the ones that care, right? So there's, you know, historically, you know, general practice law firm attorneys, they say, oh, it's an injury case. Can't be that hard.
Yeah.
90% of the cases settle. Maybe 65% of them settle without litigating. Let me try to give it my all, right? Without knowing the injury, without knowing the medicine, without knowing what it takes, without working for a firm that has the reputation of, if you don't pay us fair value, we're going to take you to court.
Exactly.
Like our litigation team's right behind us. Like they're itching for new cases to come into litigation because they want to fight. And our numbers, we've been getting about 35-40% more in litigation. Our average litigation case is that much more than pre-lit.
Yeah.
And a lot of our pre-lit settle for policy limits because, you know, our firm has a reputation that we're going to fight. But what you said about going to the doctor's offices, I've done that too with clients, especially surgeons, like you said, because most doctors in today's world, and it's not their fault, mostly the health insurance companies make them see so many people a day for them to make a fair living, right? So everybody knows when you go see a specialist, most of them have you in there, they're looking at your chart on the way in because you hear them pick it up at the door. They come in, they ask you a couple questions, they're in and out, shake, wash their hands, and they're
until
gone.
Until next one.
Yeah. 2 minutes, 5 minutes, maybe seven minutes if you're lucky. Yeah. Maybe you'll get like a physician's assistant in there with you if you're lucky. But a lot of the clients, they don't know what questions to ask, you know, or they're anxious, or they just don't have that experience where I've went exactly what you said with some of our clients to specialist office, surgeon's office, and we're able to slow them down.
Yeah.
Sit down, doc, what about this? Doc, what about that? Asking the questions that I know if I was in their seat, if it was my family member, I'd want to know. Be able to slow that doctor down just because you're there in that presence. And most of them will work with you and be cordial and answer those questions if you were there with them as their kind of guardian in that situation. So,
yeah, I think, we're in the service sector and we're servicing people at one of their worst times in their lives, right? Yeah. They've been a horrible accident and, they're injured. They have trouble sleeping. They'll have trouble doing small things, with their kids, for example. I had one client who could no longer play tennis with his kids. For him, that means so much, right? It's good time spent with your kids. Sometimes people can lose sight of that. And making sure, that we're always there for our clients, and making sure that we always empathize with them.
Yeah.
And understand what they're going through. I think that makes the biggest difference.
I think most lawyers historically, and especially younger lawyers that haven't matured. I mean injury lawyers, lawyers that specialize in injury, although we're not allowed to say we're specialists.
Yes.
But that's all we do.
Yeah.
All day long, every day, right? We get caught up, not as much at this firm anymore because we've realized this, and most more experienced personal injury lawyers kind of understand this at some point, that the insurance companies and the defense attorneys want you to get caught up in the exact name of the injury. Like, is this a disc bulge or a disc herniation?
Yeah.
Is this this or is it this that? They want you to get hung up in those words and make the whole case about those words.
Mm-hmm.
When a jury, unless they're a spine doctor or have one of those injuries themselves, they don't know what the difference between this and that.
Right.
But what is the most important part of the case? It's about how their life has changed.
Exactly.
Right? What has this injury, no matter what it's called, I don't care if it's a scratch or a bruise, if it's a really bad bruise, that it could be permanent. Like,
yeah.
At some point, right? It's what has these physical injuries done to this person's life, right? And that's what the whole story is. That's what matters. That's what juries are supposed to really value, is not just like, oh, is it this kind of broken bone or that kind of broken bone? Like, if your client is credible, that's why the credibility of our clients is so important. Clients have to be honest 110% of the time. Any amount of gray area, fudging, exaggeration will kill a client's credibility. And if the client is a little bit like that, that credibility is going to take their case all the way down, especially if you go to trial. Yeah. And if the client is credible and believable and always tells the truth, the jury's going to pick up on that at some point.
Of course.
And the jury's going to know that, okay, well, not for example, headaches, right? I can't tell if you have a headache right now. You don't know if I have a headache right now.
Yeah. Do you?
Doctors, no, thankfully, no. But doctors can't do that either, right?
Yeah.
We study brain injuries and head injuries at this firm a lot. Headaches are one of those things where it's subjective.
Mm-hmm.
I could only tell you if I'm having a headache. So if my client has terrible headaches after a traumatic brain injury, and that's their main symptom, and say they had migraines in the past, a couple times a year, they complain about it to the doctors. But now this new crash or traumatic brain injury has caused headaches or worsening migraines, right? There's no test out there. There's no CAT scan or MRI that could say, yeah, this person has headaches. There's no picture to tell the story. It's the credibility of the client. And I think it's so important, not only do we educate the clients in the beginning, but that our clients understand that it's all about our truthfulness and how we present ourselves and integrity in this field, whether it's your attorney or it's the client. telling their story, because we're telling a story. And
exactly.
The jury's either going to believe the story or not going to believe the story. If you take a case that far, you would hope the jury's going to believe your client and yourself as the attorney.
Yeah.
And if they do, God forbid, they're going to award a lot of money mm-hmm. if they believe you. If they don't believe you, it's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
They'll spend a lot of time and money after nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of attorneys and insurance adjusters that, you know, after a certain point, just look at this as, you know, another file coming in, going out.
Yeah.
And they're just looking at, you know, oh, okay, it's a bulge. But, you know, what attorneys should be doing is, you know, getting journals from those clients,
yeah.
right? What haven't they been able to do after their accident that they were able to do before the accident? You know, add some pictures. Yeah. If they missed, you know, if they missed a birthday party of a friend because they couldn't stand for longer than 15 minutes, yeah. you know, I think being able to get adjusters to really understand, you know, the real impact on that client's life goes way further than, you know, what those medical records say.
What that x-ray says, yeah.
yeah.
And those witnesses, we call them impact witnesses, before and after witnesses, we call them. They're so important, especially in litigation and trauma,
yeah.
because they tell that story from a different perspective, especially people that don't have any stake in the case, like a child has a stake in the parent's case or vice versa. But if you can get an employer or a friend that, you know, has nothing to do with the case, or things that people that wouldn't benefit from the case, they're actually more credible in that department. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's, you know, we're actually switching a program out at the firm where every week or so we can send our client a questionnaire. How did you do this week? Rate on 5 to 10.
That's
how was
awesome.
Your pain?
Yeah.
Did you have this? Did you have that? And then they could put in a little comment. And then that kind of gets stored in, you know, a database that we can or cannot use later.
Yeah.
That's kind of attorney-client privilege, but
yeah.
we keep that information. So mm-hmm. it's easier on the client. They just fill out a 1-minute survey every week.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a story to tell, because otherwise every week gets lost. Every
exactly.
month gets lost. And it's not on purpose. And it happens with everybody. Like, you couldn't probably tell me what you were doing on August 15th, for
example. Exactly.
Like, we lose, that's our brains, we move on.
Yeah.
We're supposed to move on because our brains could never hold all that.
And if you ask them 6 months later, they're only going to remember one or two things.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, doing what you're doing on a weekly basis, you're capturing the whole picture.
And unfortunately, the doctors don't have enough time to fully document every daily living activity that's been affected from a crash, right? Our experts try to do it, but the normal treating doctors don't have the ability or the time to kind of go into every facet of their life as a real specialist would. Even if there's real specialists, they're so busy. We have to help our clients prove
exactly.
that side of the story. And that's where I think a very good, caring, and thorough injury lawyer can make the difference in a case. Not just present the medical records and try to get an offer. Like, you have to tell that story. The only way to tell the story is to get to know your client.
Yeah.
So you give your clients your cell phone?
Yeah. All the time. I had one client. I was able to get him a $400,000 settlement. He, you know, referred me multiple clients. And what he would tell them is, I called my attorney by mistake at 3 a.m. one time. He called me back at 5 a.m.
Well,
saying, you know, is there something wrong?
Yeah.
And so, you know, even if I'm in a meeting, I will relay that message over to my team. You know, we'll get on it right away.
I found that I've done it in many of the cases, especially when my cases are in litigation where I have to be in close contact
exactly.
with the client. Clients don't abuse that generally.
No, exactly.
They're not going to call your cell phone every day just to talk to your lawyer because technically we're free until we recover money for them.
Right, right.
So, all right. John, to wrap up this episode, let's get to one final topic. In the next 5 years, maybe 10 years, you know, where do you see the personal injury practice going, and what should our clients be concerned about when finding a personal injury lawyer?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of changes coming, right, with autonomous vehicles, vehicle safety. That's a great thing. There's going to be less accidents. You know, some research say in the next 10 years that the rear-end collisions are going to drop down by about 40%.
Accidents in general.
Accidents in general as well. And so, you know, I think it's going to be a safer place. But there's also, you know, other factors. For example, a lot of private equity is going into the personal injury sector. And so I think, you know, clients really need to make sure when they're choosing an attorney that they choose an attorney who is going to go to war with them, you know, not just take their case, not, you know, they're just not going to be a number, you know, but rather someone who the insurance company is afraid of, someone who, if they don't get the, you know, the fair amount, is going to take that case all the way to litigation, even if it's a small amount. And so in addition, I think with AI, it's going to make our jobs easier. I think we're going to be able to, for those attorneys who can, you know, use AI.
Adopt.
Yeah. And if you're able to adapt it very well, I think, you know, we can really do better by our clients. We can get them even better value than we were, you know, 10 years ago. You know, like you were saying, the ability to get how those clients are feeling on a weekly basis, I think we're going to be able to paint a better picture. So, you know, go to an attorney who, you know, who knows how to use technology, but also is a fighter, a dog, a warrior, you know, and is one that the insurance companies are afraid of. And how do you pick those law firms?
That's a good question.
Right? Yeah. So what do you think about that?
So that I was just thinking, like, from the consumer's perspective, you know, they're maybe never dealt with a lawyer before. How do they know what we're talking about or be able to find what we're talking about, right? It's not, you can't just, there's no magical place where all this stuff is rated accurately, where you can find an attorney that is all of these things that you're describing. And I agree with you. There is a lot of changes coming to this business. But to find an attorney that, look, I have this conversation with my partner all the time, and that's why he and I generally were only going to work on a few big cases, is because we're the type of person that once we get involved in a case, especially a case in litigation, we're going to give it our all, no matter what it takes. No matter if we work all weekend, every night, like I told you that I've been doing in the last month here, because I have two big cases coming together. We don't know, we don't have like a low gear. Once we're in on that case, we give it our best, but I can't do that for hundreds and hundreds of clients at one time. So to find an attorney today is daunting to some degree. Like, you can look at their websites. A lot of them say the same thing.
Yeah.
Billboards generally say the same thing. We'll fight for you. Okay.
Entry. Question mark.
Yeah. Prove it. Like, so, I hate to say it, but probably client reviews on Google or other sources have to be one of the best ways, in my opinion, still. And look at what it says in those reviews, not just the 5-star rating.
Reviews.
Read what those people are saying about those attorneys, because ethically, we are not permitted to have fake reviews.
Yeah.
We can't pay businesses or in other countries to write us reviews.
Correct.
Every one of those reviews have to be traced back to someone who's contacted our firm if we were ethically audited for this. And it's very important that that happens, and the clients kind of know that these review sites out there are, you know, real for lawyers. They should be.
Yeah.
Now, they might not all be for real. Some lawyers play loose by the rules, but basically, I think those client review sites are probably the, especially Google, probably one of the better ways. Now, of course, you want to look at their websites too.
Of course.
And you want to check what their results are.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a lot of law firms that don't, that do PI, that don't have experience in bigger cases.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a bigger case, you want to look for a firm that has bigger case experience. And, you know, I can admit earlier in my career, I didn't have big case experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then got more and more experience. And now we have $10 million recoveries, $7 million, $5 million. You know, every year we have multi-million dollar recoveries at this firm because we're experienced and we have the reputation to get those cases. But I believe doing your homework, interviewing the lawyers, checking the reviews, and maybe talking to other people is probably the best way.
I think asking around as well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But everyone has a different opinion. Not everybody understands. It's hard to pick out the best lawyer, and that's the problem for most consumers.
Yeah. And there's a lot of lead service, you know, lead generators going around out there now. So if you're in an accident and you're being targeted by someone, hey, you know, we can find you attorneys. They're usually, you know, just getting you and then sending you to a law firm that has thousands of clients, and you just become a number.
Yeah, some people just don't care, and they're going to suffer some problems with if they end up with a firm that doesn't run their firms well like we do,
yeah.
Doesn't fight, you know, because, you know, they're the same people that Google personal injury lawyer in my town mm-hmm. near me and pick the first
yeah.
Google pay-per-click listing at yeah. the top without even really vetting them, call that number or get connected to that firm and just choose the first one.
Yeah.
So if you're the kind of person that chooses the first one without doing your research, beware.
Yeah.
Because there are good yeah. lawyers, bad lawyers, there are mediocre lawyers, and there are great lawyers.
Yeah.
And I implore everyone who's looking for a lawyer, do your homework. Look at the reputation overall and look at their history, their reviews, and their recoveries on the case sites. But most importantly, look at what other people are talking about them.
Yes.
And
that's true.
That's the most important thing. Yeah. Well, John, thanks for coming on today.
It's a pleasure.
Maybe
my
we
pleasure.
Can do this again sometime and talk more shop.
Yes.
And how we serve clients and how we feel the industry in general should serve injured clients.
Well, I would love to have you come to my office. We'll do a podcast there.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, Jeff.